This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's a fresh hour of Sharp Money as we welcome you back to downtown Las Vegas. We're hanging out at our Circa Sportsbook studio, rare for us on a 4th of July holiday, but we're making the most of it. I'm Ben Wilson. He's Joe Serallo, hanging with me from L.A. And Joe, we've got a couple of big baseball games set to get underway here in the next few minutes, part of this very well strawn out 4th of July slate. We get baseball starting at 11 a.m. Eastern time, and it goes all the way through tonight. You have one play here coming up. Good pitching matchup today, where Corbin Burns and the Baltimore Orioles in Seattle, where it doesn't seem like the ball ever really flies at T-Mobile Park. It's our lowest total on the board, 7 juiced to the under across all books. As I update my odd screen here, as Bryce Miller goes for the Seattle Mariners, with the Orioles getting some late market support as well, up to about $1.50 consensus.
Yeah, I actually have two plays on this one, Ben. Love the Baltimore side in this. So I took him outright money line, laid $1.45. And then I jumped on Corbin Burns over 7.5 strikeouts. I got plus 105. I've seen that number vary from plus 105 being the best price I've seen to minus $1.15. Frankly, I would take any of those. I know 20 cents to some, a bigger disparity to others. They don't sweat it too much. But you know, you're asking Burns at the end of the day to get 8 strikeouts. Grayson Rodriguez got 8. I took it plus money a couple days ago in the series opener. Dean Kramer, I didn't take it yesterday. I don't know what the number was. It might have been 5.5. He's not really a strikeout guy. And he got 8 as well. So, I mean, if those two guys can do it, Corbin Burns, even though his strikeouts are down this year, he certainly should be able to rack up 8 against the Mariners team that's averaging nearly 11 per game, dead last in baseball. And a team that he had 11 against in a start in Camden Yards, I think 6 or 7 starts ago for Burnsy. So love him over 7.5 Ks in that one. You know, I was looking at a third play. And not that I typically don't even like to make two plays in the same game. This is an exception for me. But I was looking, comparing what's the better bet, take the O's money line or maybe look at a Nerfy, because Bryce Miller has been excellent pitching to the Nerfy this year for Seattle, especially at home in T-Mobile ballpark, which you mentioned just a couple minutes ago, really a pitcher's park out there. But then I look at Miller, and as of late, that ERA has gone through the roof. And, you know, a lot of people are scared to take Nerfies when the Yankees play, the Phillies play, the Dodgers play. I'm scared when the Orioles play, because Gunnar Henderson, even though I feel great about Corbin Burns' half of that Nerfy, Gunnar Henderson's top 3 in first inning home runs this year. So he's a guy that scares me. Even with Bryce Miller on the bump, it's, you know, yes, his first innings have been good, but he's certainly prone to giving up runs and doing so in bulk, especially lately. And that was priced, I saw, anywhere between $1.50 and $1.70. So I decided to stay away from that Nerfy, play the O's, play Burns, and just keep fading this Mariners lineup.
And what I like about that is, so often we handicap single baseball games based on the full season's worth of data and whether there is positive, negative regression set to come in. But there's the situational aspect that sometimes gets overlooked. Mariners playing their worst baseball of the season right now. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. 4 straight losses. They've lost 7-10. Third worst offense in WRC plus over the last month. While Baltimore has started to surge, they overtake the Yankees, were plus money for most of this buildup throughout the streak here, Joe, to win the AL East. That has now started to flip as the Yankees lose again today, swept at home by the Reds, an 8-4 loss there, as the Orioles, as it stands, coming into that game now with a 2-game lead here on the Yankees. So not only are you buying on long-term pieces of evidence and sample sizes, but you're also supporting a team that situationally, every box is checked for why you'd want to bet Baltimore today. And you're also getting the pitching backing that you would want in a situation where you're having to lay a price on the road against a first place team, which the Mariners have seen what was a 6-7 game lead now all the way down to 1.5 here, Joe, coming into today.
Yeah. And if you look at the Yankees really quickly, with that loss now that just became final at home, I can't believe they got swept by Cincinnati. Sorry to our Yankee fan or Yankee backers out there, but pretty happy about that one. That was fun to watch the Reds go into the Bronx and sweep a series. Now the Yankees in the loss column, Ben, because when I look at standings throughout the year in baseball, I mean, right now you've got some teams that have played 82 games, others that have played 88. I just keep my eye on that loss column all year long. And they're now 4 back in the loss column behind the Orioles, who I'd be curious. I don't know if our team behind the glass there can bring up the current updated odds for the AL East. I got the Orioles at nearly 2-1 preseason. They were plus 190, a team that won over 100 a year ago, a team that beat the Yankees by, I believe it was 17 games in the standings last year. They were nearly 2-1 coming into the year because the Yankees added Soto. And when the Yankees made that addition of Soto, I came out and I said it. Look, It's a great addition. I love Juan Soto. He bolsters the top of that lineup, but it's still not as deep a lineup as that of the O's. I still have questions about their pitching, and their pitching shut me up for the first two and a half months of the year. They had the best ERA in baseball, but now guys like Luis Gil, Carlos Rodon, Nestor Cortez, Marcus Stroman, they've all taken pretty drastic steps backwards as of late. So you look at the Yankees right now, and they might be gearing up for a wild card when everyone was ready to crown them as division champs with 110 wins just 2-3 weeks ago.
And the odds still have yet to really catch up. And a lot of that goes into the fact the Yankees are a very public team, lots of betting interest in a behemoth sort of organization like the Yankees. Still, -115 to win the division. You can get the Orioles at even money. I'm looking at my DraftKings odds screen right now. You can still bet that. There are books that have the Orioles plus money. Not to say this is a done deal. We still have nearly half the season to play, but we have seen a good amount of sample size to suggest that clearly Baltimore is deeper, a better stable of pitching. Sure, the Yankees have the higher price, the big name guys. Aaron Judge is having an unbelievable year and is certainly very likely to win AL MVP, but it doesn't take away from the fact that the makeup of the Orioles is one that makes them a pretty good bet to take this division. I would still advocate for that play right now, even at an even money price. 2-game lead now for the O's as they've got a chance to make it 2.5 with the win there today.
Yeah, and the Yankees, they just, you know, you get past the top of that lineup, they don't scare me, man. I would take the ball and go out on the bump against what they're packing 6-9 right now. Like, they're being forced to use Alex Verdugo as a five hitter. I think he hit cleanup the other night when Soto was a scratch. This guy was not brought in to be a cleanup hitter, to be a five hitter, right? Verdugo was brought in to lengthen that lineup, right? To hit seventh and get you back over to the top of the lineup, because he's a good hitter, good contact hitter mainly, who can maybe hit 280 on one of his better years. And then he can kind of flip the lineup if you put him in that seventh spot. But when you're asking him to be in the heart of that lineup, in the meat of that lineup, and then, you know, you're handing it down to J.D. Davis, who I love. It shouldn't be in the middle of a lineup for a team vying for the one seed. You know, you got Trevino behind the dish. Gleyber Torres just stinks. LeMahieu is a shell of his old self. It's not an intimidating lineup. They were winning on pitching, and if they can't continue to win on pitching, they're not going to continue to win.
And that's a game. It is yet to officially go final. It's about to, though. Bottom of the ninth, one out for the Yanks, and nobody on, who will slip even further in the standings as it stands. And the other big mover today, and it's a mover over the last week, Joe, Astros, a week ago, +240 to win the division. They're now +120 after Framber Valdez bounces back from a poor early start, but at least for him, both pitchers, Valdez and Chris Bassett north of the border, really struggled today. 5-3 win for the Stros. That feels like a tough luck loss if you took an 8.5 over with the way that game started. You were mentioning earlier, Joe, that no-run first inning got blown up in a big way early, but the Stros hang on, and that's a team that's caught fire. A lot of us wondered when would the bye point come on them, but how about this? Run differential, 44 runs greater, +42 runs greater, excuse me, +43 to +1 comparing the Seattle Mariners. That's not always the be-all, end-all of team success, but it is telling here the way the Astro bats have finally woken up, and they have made this big run here with still so much baseball left to be played.
Yeah, it's always been a matter of time for this Houston team, right? They had to adjust. Dusty retires, new manager in Espada. They've had an uphill battle in terms of the health of their pitching, and even the guys who are healthy and who have been healthy underperformed to start the year. I mean, Hunter Brown had an ERA north of 9 in the month of April. Since May 1st, Hunter Brown's as good a pitcher as any in Major League Baseball, Ben. You know, Justin Verlander, he's out until at least the All-Star break. Framber Valdez has missed time. Christian Javier looked great to start the year, but he didn't last too long before he hit the shelf. So the Astros will be getting some pitching reinforcements. They'll be getting healthier. And when that happens, watch out, because you won't get a price as generous as +120, let alone the +240 that you had access to maybe a week and a half ago.
Very rare that you will then have that, yes, as you point out, on a Houston Astros team coming together certainly at the right time. A couple other games here that have gone final as we continue on this 4th of July holiday slate. Cardinals take down the Pirates 3-2 in extras there as a flip of favorites happened. Money toward Pittsburgh today, yet that was not fruitful in what closed as a pick 'em. Under 9, though, cashes with ease. The dream season for the Guardians continues. 8-4 win over the White Sox. 8-4 there as the game goes flying over the 8.5 total, and the Sox continue to. That is what now 31 units. You're underwater there, Joe, if you're betting the White Sox every day. Not
brutal
that anybody is doing that, but yes, another poor outing on that front of it. And we're going to talk about this a little bit later in the hour, but you start to look at some of these odds for the top seeds in each league, NL versus AL, as we fast forward toward the postseason, as much as people are saying, when is this Cleveland run going to come back to earth? You also can't argue what they're doing right now, and they get the benefit of seeing the White Sox so often in that division.
Yeah, the only thing that the Guardians must be sore about is that with the new scheduling format that took over a couple years ago, they only get them 12 times instead of 18 or 19 like they used to. Cleveland is the real deal. You know, that division's actually, despite having a team like the White Sox as the bottom dweller, that division's overperformed this year compared to expectations. The Royals are a legit playoff team. Minnesota, not the juggernaut they were a year ago, but they're still in the playoff picture. Detroit started much better, and they have some pretty solid starting pitching. It's not a cakewalk division. So what Cleveland's doing, they've beat the best teams. They've beat the Orioles. They've beat the Yankees. Cleveland is definitely a team to take seriously. Ben, really quick, I'm intrigued by this. It's too late to get it in. I was going to say the Red Sox were just $1.45 live favorites. It's up to minus 375 on DraftKings as they just scored. Once that game went to the 11th, I don't know if you have that on, but Miami failed to score, having a guy on third, one out in the bottom of the 10th. And once the 10th inning ended, I was all in on Boston, but now they've scored and that price is just not friendly enough.
Usually never optimal when you can't get the runner home from third and one out. No, we are glued here at Circa, the Andy Murray retirement tour going on. Just played a doubles match, and that does it. They're doing all the special ceremonies at center court. Again, I'm obviously staunchly anti-USA just because I'm watching Wimbledon today. We've established that throughout the show so far.
That's what I've been doing. Bangers and match later?
Yes, that's what I've been glued to so far. We'll get back into the baseball here a little bit, talk some top seed odds in each AL and NL. But up next, we go out to our progressive guest line. Excited to get this man on, Jeff Ulrich, to talk some NHL and MLB.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now on our homepage, vsin.com, Wimbledon best bets for tomorrow. They're already out from our Zach Cohen, even though there's still action wrapping up today at the All England Club. And Matt Williams, his NFL prop betting tips for 2024. That is part of so much off-season NFL content we have, and that's why we are also bringing on the man who will join us in just a second. Jeff Ulrich going to join us here on our progressive guest line as we continue. They are doing the whole Andy Murray retirement tour. That's what, as much as it is the 4th of July, Joe Cirillo, I'm appreciating it. A legend in his own right. He was still in the mixed doubles, by the way, with Edema Raducanu, their fellow Brit that he'll be playing with. So he's not totally done yet, but they're doing the whole walk of honor, and they really are talking this up. But when you're the first Brit to win Wimbledon in ages, first in the modern era, you got to give him his due, right? I mean, this is great. I appreciate this. This is great stuff. I'm more intrigued than I know you're intrigued by your Reds Marlins random 11th inning game, Joe. But, you know,
Red Sox Marlins. And that $1.40 price now is unplayable. Sox are up 4-2, one out, bases juice, top 11 here. I'm doing the patriotic thing, Ben. And that's, I've got four baseball games on right now. MLB big inning split screen action on the 4th of July. That's how we celebrate this holiday.
That's where I feel like I have to keep doing the bit. I'm going to just intentionally say the wrong team. I'm just going to, you know, ignore the baseball, even though that's the only thing we have to bet on now, essentially, the rest of the day. Cool. We'll get into that in a little bit.
It works out. We all know Ben is short for Benedict Arnold.
Absolutely. That is a fact that cannot be misrepresented in any other way. To our progressive guest line, we appreciate him giving us some time here on this 4th of July, as Jeff Ulrich will give us a few minutes on our progressive guest line, a PGA, NHL, and NFL analyst. You see him at DraftKings, also at the Fantasy Grind, joining us right now. And we'll talk some NFL here first, then get into some of his NHL takeaways following a bevy of free agent moves, a couple of futures he's eyeing on. But as far as the NFL, we just released our NFL guide. One division that you are really eyeing in particular, Jeff, is the AFC South here. And taking a look at a future, it's a division where a lot of buzz has been garnered toward the Houston Texans. But what's a different team outside of the Texans that you see having the ability to make some noise this year within the South?
I think the South is really interesting. I mean, I think you've got a team in the Texans that are good. I mean, I'm not expecting like huge regression from them or anything, or necessarily want to go out of my way to go against CJ Stroud. But I think that the second team of the division, Jacksonville Jaguars, do have a bunch of question marks. I mean, Trevor Lawrence, we could be talking about him a year from now as being the worst quarterback in this division. I really legitimately think, and I'm not suggesting he's terrible or anything, but this is a pretty stacked division all of a sudden with young talent. You've got Anthony Richardson coming back. You've got Stroud. Will Levis, I still think, is underrated. I got Brian Callahan in the Titans. I think that The Titans make for an interesting futures bet, but the team I'm really high on is the Colts. At plus 310 on DraftKings, they're behind the Jacksonville Jaguars in odds. I think these teams should be flipped at the very least. Really like what the Colts did in the draft, getting Leitu, getting Mitchell, just basically falling to them. Leitu may be the best defensive player in the draft. You add in a healthy Anthony Richardson, a good insurance policy in Joe Flacco, and what I think is a really, really good head coach in Shane Steichen, who almost took this team to the playoffs with Gardner Minshew, changed the offense midseason. I think the Colts are underrated. I really like them as a division winner bet. My favorite way to play them is still just over 8.5 wins, but this is a team I just think has a lot of upside, and I think that playing for the upside with the Colts this year is something you should be doing, especially at these levels, like I said, when they're behind the Jaguars.
Yeah, Jeff, I don't know if you heard an audible wow come out of me when you said Trevor Lawrence could be the worst quarterback in this division. I don't think he'd fall behind anyone on Tennessee, but that wow is actually because I agree with you that he could at least be considered the third best quarterback in this division moving forward, man. I'm really high on AR working with Steichen for a full season. And you mentioned Mitchell. Now he's got some actual viable threats besides Michael Pittman, who's drawn so much attention from opposing defenses. I think the Colts are definitely scary, and I agree on that way to play them at 8.5 as opposed to the division, because I still think this is Houston's division. So many people are trying to say we're going to have a sophomore slump from CJ Stroud and company. I don't see it from Stroud. I don't see it from a coach and a leader like DeMeco Ryans. What do you make of the Texans, who on paper, adding Diggs, adding Mixon, I believe are geared up to really contend, not just for the division, but for the AFC championship?
Absolutely. And look, like when you have a talent like CJ Stroud, again, it's almost, you know, you don't want to just put him in Patrick Mahomes territory, but you are betting against potentially one of the best quarterbacks, top three quarterbacks in the league. It's not something you want to do. So if I was balancing my bets, which I will be doing, I mean, majority will be going just on over wins or something, but certainly sprinkling in the Colts at this level. I do think the Texans will be a force to be reckoned with this year. And I agree, like if they do regress, I still think that they're a team that you have to project to make the playoffs. And if they get into the playoffs with the kind of depth they have, certainly could be, you know, a team to reckon with. So no, Texans aren't necessarily a team I'm looking to drop off, you know, in terms of like the Titans and Levis. I will see with Will Levis. I'm pretty high on him, to be honest, especially working with Brian Callahan, but agreed, you'd have to put him behind at least Trevor Lawrence right now. But certainly, you know, the Texans and the Colts, two teams I think could both have strong just outcomes this year, and potentially do something in the playoffs as well.
Jeff Ulrich with us here on VSiN Sharp Money. Follow him at The Fantasy Grind, thefantasylife.com. Before we transition into some of your NHL offseason thoughts here with some intriguing futures prices out there, so many options now just to play the season-long props, whether that is the stats on the over-unders, on whether it's yardage, touchdown, or leaders in individual categories here. There is a lot you have to break down. Where did you start? What stands out to you as far as the value in those markets?
No, I mean, look, this is something like over the next month and with training camp, you know, looking for potential targets in the over unders and the totals and stuff like that. We talked a little bit, you know, about like pre-program here about Breece Hall. And I think that, you know, looking at the most regular season rushing yards, Christian McCaffrey isn't necessarily a player I want to go up against too much. This isn't a market that I'm looking to dive into, but I do think Breece Hall props this year are something you should be considering, you know, a full year potentially working with Aaron Rodgers behind a better offensive line. I mean, if anyone is going to be able to come up, I mean, and potentially like take the throne or just, you know, put in some kind of immaculate season, Breece Hall, as we saw from his college tape and just what he's done in the NFL, has the explosiveness to do it. So plus 800, you know, in that market, you've got Jonathan Taylor working with, you know, a rushing quarterback, potentially siphoning off carries. You've got Saquon Barkley doing the same thing. And I just don't really believe as much in the explosiveness of Saquon Barkley anymore. Breece Hall plus 800 is pretty tempting for most rushing yards. And I think that, you know, if you want to play for the upside of Breece Hall this year, that's a way to do it. I mean, the number isn't huge. It's not massive. And you're going against a really good market leader, but it's also the running back. It's volatile. Injuries can happen. We did just hear Kyle Shanahan talk about dialing back Christian McCaffrey's carries. I don't believe that's going to happen, but it certainly still could be a thing. So yeah, Breece Hall, definitely a player I'm looking to play for the upside. We'll probably get some exposure to him potentially for most rushing yards.
You know, Jeff, when you look at that NFL futures market, the Minnesota Vikings, 6.5 seems to be the number we're seeing most places. DraftKings, you can get them under 6.5 at plus money, plus 130. Am I crazy for thinking there's no such thing as a lock? But when you look at that quarterback room of Sam Darnold and J.J. McCarthy, who I call Zach Wilson with a higher IQ. I mean, I think under 6.5 is the move. Am I wrong here?
I think we're pretty much in line here with the Vikings, which is good to hear. No, you're not crazy. I love this bet. It's probably going to be potentially my biggest bet of the year. We're going to see how training camp goes. But go look at the Vikings opening schedule. They play the Giants. And then it's like 9 teams where they're going to be underdogs probably in every single game. It is ugly. They're in a division with the Green Bay Packers and the Lions, potentially one of the top 5 defenses with the Bears too. Although I'm not super high on the Bears, but it's a tough division. They're probably going to start Sam Darnold, which is what the whisperings are. J.J. McCarthy probably not ready. Sam Darnold going against that gauntlet. Yeah, I will fade that all day. I'm surprised it's still plus money. Wouldn't be shocked if by the time we got to the start of the regular season, that under 6.5 wins is more like minus 120 or something.
Jeff Ulrich does great work, not only for the NFL. Check out his weekly PGA write-ups on his site. Follow him at The Fantasy Grind, thefantasylife.com. And also all the rest of us here in the U.S. are just eating grilled meats on the 4th of July. People north of the border are breaking down hockey offseason and already getting their futures bets out there. So with Jeff joining us, kind of give us some time here from north of the border, one of our favorite Canadian guests we bring on the show very often here on VSiN. What early moves have you been the most impressed with amidst specific teams there in the NHL?
I mean, look, the team that's making the flashiest moves is definitely the Predators. And I mean, you've got to give them a shout out. Like they're going for it. They had a really competitive team last year. You know, they went toe to toe with Vancouver and they just didn't quite have, you know, what you'd call like the upside necessarily to win that 7-game series. Vancouver definitely was probably a little bit underrated, but certainly went out and, made some moves. I mean, getting Marchessault and getting Stamkos, that's exactly the kind of upside that I think they were missing in that series against Vancouver, where just a couple key goals is going to tilt the series in your favor. We saw the Oilers, you know, be able to get it with a couple big games for Connor McDavid. Now the Predators add a couple big wheels here. This is a team that is still, you know, sort of just languishing around plus 1800 right now in the Stanley Cup odds. I also kind of think that they're a little bit interesting for the division win. They've got the Avalanche, who's got real salary cap problems ahead of them, did not go out of the playoffs very well either. And then the Dallas Stars, who, I mean, I'm not sure how much more ceiling the Dallas Stars have. I think the Predators as the Central Division winner, plus 380, not worth a potential bet, and certainly maybe even looking for over regular season wins when that market comes out on the Predators. So like them, I think the Red Wings also kind of an interesting early season, potentially Stanley Cup bet.
No question on that. Jeff Ulrich, great to see you as always, man. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Have a good one.
Yeah, cannot deny the leadership. Stamkos, Marchessault, each going to Nashville there in 2024-25. When we come back, we'll talk odds to get the top seed in each AL and NL with Joe when we come back.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With our all-new NFL betting guide out now, there's never been a better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. And for a limited time, you can get an annual subscription to VSiN Pro at an unbeatable price. It's normally $240 a year. You can subscribe now for just $199 with promo code SHARP. Plus, we'll throw in an extra month for free. That is 13 months of VSiN Pro access to everything we do, including daily best bets, 24/7 video, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and all our special edition betting guides to keep you betting smarter all year long. Do not miss out on our all-new NFL betting guide with this incredible deal. VSiN.com/subscribe. Promo code SHARP to get 13 months of VSiN Pro for just $199 and instant access to our all-new NFL betting guide. Back here on this special 4th of July edition of Sharp Money, Joe Cirillo with me from L.A. I'm Ben Wilson here in Vegas, our Circus Sportsbook studio. Wyatt Tomchek behind the glass. It's a shame we're not over at Bar Canada, only because I was excited to make Wyatt talk on air about what is happening with Hendrick Motorsports having to drop one of America's most beloved sponsors. But sadly, Wyatt behind the glass, so he cannot give us his foray and his insight into the latest sponsorship deals of NASCAR. I don't know if you saw that news, Joe, but Hooters no longer a sponsor of Hendrick Motorsports. Sad to
see. Oh, wow. That's
couldn't pay the bills, apparently. Joe stopped going, I guess. That's the only explanation.
You know, I've been once in my life, and I was so underwhelmed by... I thought the food was horrendous. I'll just say I was underwhelmed by the food. I was underwhelmed by everything.
That's a strong, it's a strong take. I'm sure others share that opinion because they've had to close a bunch of stores. It's sad.
Yeah.
Previous American dream coming to an end.
They had a little surge, you know, after the appearance that they made in, what was it, the Adam Sandler movie, Big Daddy.
Right.
They mentioned Hooters a bunch of times with his buddy's girlfriend. And, you know, I mean, sales just went through the roof after that movie came out.
Between that and the Office episode with Michael Scott, that was really the peak. And ever since then, it has come down. That was the big NASCAR news. We're following and really watching here Major League Baseball on this 4th of July. A couple other games that have gone final. Bailey Ober and the Twins get there against the Tigers, and Kenta Maeda, who is awful in the reign of the Twin Cities. 12-3 game that gets shortened to just 7 innings. A win, though, for the Twins. And we were talking earlier, Joseph AL Central here. Guardians, another win today as they knock off the White Sox. Biggest favorites on the board. What's fascinating, we look at some of these odds to be the number one seed in both the AL and the NL. AL, you have this battle at the top right now in the East with the Orioles, the Yankees. Yankees are favored to have the number one seed in the East. And based on what we have talked about already on the show, which is that there is no way that should be correct, whether it's to be the favorites in the AL East, it correlates directly to this same market, the odds to be the number one seed in the AL. With the way the Central has played out, granted, much stronger than in past years with the Royals, Twins being very competitive. After today, the Guardians, within a win of the Orioles, tied in the loss column, whereas the Yankees, 3 more losses, about to be 4, and it is officially 4 now that they have gone final with an 8-4 loss at home to the Reds in the loss column to both of those teams. Does it shock you that the Guardians are as long as 6-1, as much as the narrative has been they're going to come back down to earth? How can we really dispute what they've done, though, through a half plus of the season? And isn't 6-1 the best value proposition on this board right now if you're in a jurisdiction where you can bet it?
Yeah, my initial inclination is that's ridiculous. Now, admittedly, you know, I haven't exactly perused through the remainder of the Yankees, Orioles, and Guardians schedules. So I don't know if Cleveland maybe has the most difficult second half schedule in Major League Baseball. Although, you know, in the AL Central, while I gave them their, you know, their propers and their due that they've overperformed expectations, let's still not pretend it's as good as or as difficult as the AL East. So I'd imagine the Guardians would have an easier upcoming schedule than the Yankees and the Orioles. I think 6-1 is just a misprice. I think it's got to do with market size, not that Baltimore is a big market team. But, you know, they play in the AL East, which is a big market division, if you will. Just having the Yankees and Boston and Toronto in there, the AL East is always going to get more respect than the AL Central, even in a year where Kansas City and Minnesota are playing great because of their market size. So I think that this is a blatant misprice. I'm not saying that the Guardians are absolutely going to have the best record in the American League, but I'm saying it's absolutely realistic, and the price does not reflect that. I think at 6-1, this is definitely a flyer that you should consider taking.
For the record, the strength of schedule, it does portend to a tougher second half. Cleveland's second toughest strength of schedule, but I would also add on that. But look, with still so much sample size left to be earned and to be parsed through in the Major League Baseball season, you know, the difference between Cleveland, second toughest schedule, and let's say Baltimore, who technically has the fifth easiest schedule, we're talking 30 percentage points, which is not that big of a gap. You know, it's not like you have one team. This isn't the NFL, right, where some teams get just massive differences and variance with that schedule. And look, the Orioles and the Guardians will play each other. Guardians will play the Yankees still to come. 8 games between the Guardians and the Twins, which in large part will end up deciding this. And while the Twins put up good numbers, what we have seen continually is that Minnesota is a team that against elite competition tends to struggle with consistency. They beat up on your Tigers and your White Sox to the AL Central, but every time they've been, for the most part this year, not to overgeneralize, but for the most part, amidst the best of the best, you see the weaknesses of Minnesota come out. That's why I wouldn't put too much stock into that strength of schedule, as much as it is easy to say, well, Guardians have the second toughest, Orioles have the fifth easiest. Naturally, you should just ignore Cleveland when the pricing suggests these should at the very least be a little bit closer.
Also, you have to imagine the Guardians are going to get better in some respect. No, their starting pitching has been pretty disastrous. They lost Shane Bieber the opening week of the season. And you've got guys like Logan Allen, who last I saw, I think he had a start since then, so his record might have changed. But he was just 8-3 with an ERA north of 5, right? Tristan McKenzie has actually been almost a guaranteed loss for the Guardians when he's on the bump. And it's weird that a team, you know, it's playing as well as they are, you could say, has almost a guaranteed loss in the rotation. But, you know, Tanner Bibee has, I think, not pitched to his ceiling. I think their starting pitching has largely, Carlos Carrasco, right? He's still in the rotation. Their starting pitching's underperformed. And, you know, I think that they're only going to get better. I'd imagine the guys that they keep in the rotation are going to pitch better. And I'd imagine that they're going to bolster the rotation at the upcoming trade deadline. There's no reason not to go all in when you have a legitimate shot at not just making the playoffs, guys, but having home field advantage throughout the entirety of October. So, yeah, I think Cleveland, their pitching is going to get better. I think 6-1, you got to take a flyer on it.
And what you say there too, Joe, about a guy like Bibee not pitching up to his potential, it speaks to how great the bullpen has been. Because if you bet Bibee in every single one of his starts, only one other pitcher, who is the now injured Trevor Williams in Washington, has a better ROI than Tanner Bibee in individual starts this year, which is a crazy stat. Yet, if you actually watch him on a night-in, night-out basis per start, you're not coming away with thinking this guy is the second most profitable pitcher in baseball. But when you have the best bullpen ERA and whip in the game, it is made up for a lot of those issues, which Guardians bottom eight starting pitcher ERA and bottom five whip among those starting staffs in Major League Baseball so far. Just an interesting side note on that. For the NL side of it, Phillies -115 here to get the number one seed, Joe, as we pull up those updated standings. Phillies going to lose most likely today, down 9-2 in the eighth against the Chicago Cubs, as they will be unable to complete the sweep. Although we should say this has been a weird week odds-wise, where I was asking Adam Burke about this yesterday, why he thought the market was just steaming against the Phillies every day, and he thought it was probably just, you know, a lot of these modelers looking at all the lack of bats here with the Real Mutos, the Harpers of the worlds, the Schwarbers out of the lineup yet. It didn't matter for Philly. They win the first two of the series against the Cubs anyway. And well, despite losing today, still 57-30 on the season. It's a four-game lead over the Dodgers for the number one seed, the best record in the NL. And the question becomes, is that a fair price, or should, with all the issues going on for LA, who are at +140, should that price be even greater in favor of Philly, who have that four-game edge as we start the second half?
Well, so my first inclination, and real quick, Ben, back on the Cleveland Guardians, Tanner Bibee's got that ERA down to about 3.5. It was much higher not too long ago. He's their leading, well, actually, he's the only guy in that rotation who qualifies. They have three guys who have started almost every game this season, but just don't pitch enough innings to qualify. Carrasco, McKenzie, Logan Allen. All three of their ERA is north of 5. It's absurd. Ben Lively has actually been their best starter. Yeah, Cleveland's starting pitching can only go up from here. On to the Phillies and the Dodgers, though. I think that price, my first gut feeling when I look at that, is that they're factoring in a busy deadline for LA. I'd imagine that's got to be it right now because, you know, right now, look, Philly, I don't know if they're going to be all that active at the deadline. They've got a stacked roster. All they need to do is get healthy, and they'll be fine. You see Trey Turner's back now. He's starting an all-star game. He doesn't deserve to be starting, but when he's played this year, he's hitting .342. Real Muto, Schwarber, Harper, that Phillies lineup way scarier, way deeper than that Dodgers lineup. I would still pick them, and I would even consider maybe laying the $1.15, although I might wait till we get closer to October to make a bet that, you know, frankly, something like that in the next 3 months, I could do better in the stock market than sitting on a -115 ticket. So I might wait till we get closer to make that bet, but I would still say they're my pick to have the best record in the National League. The Dodgers need a busy deadline. I can reevaluate again on August 1st. But the Dodgers, if they stand pat, they're not going to be better than the Phillies, plain and simple.
And it brings up the thought of, even if the Dodgers are as active as we tend to see teams in markets like that, how much will Jack Flaherty, as much as he is on your top five list of guys, Joe, who could make an impact at the deadline, is Jack Flaherty all of a sudden going to make this starting rotation one that you can just firmly rely on down the stretch with all the injuries? That's the big question to me on LA. Even if there is all this activity, how much of that can you just blindly bake in? I think that's kind of the thing we run into oftentimes as bettors, where teams are active and are buyers, and we say, all right, well, that has to be a good thing. Doesn't always have to be. I don't know. Flaherty, I'm not super high on. He's been, as you pointed out earlier in the show, Joe, been very, very disappointing over the last few years.
Well, definitely last year post-deadline. This year with Detroit, he's been great. He's had a couple hiccups here and there. But at the beginning of June, I think he went 3 straight starts without an earned run. His K numbers are up. I think him or a Crochet would terrify me with LA.
We will continue to talk more baseball in a little bit. How about the All-Star game? Do we agree with the lineups? We'll discuss next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
With our all-new NFL betting guide out right now, it is a great time to be an NFL bettor. Make this season your best ever, because this guide is packed with everything you need to bet the NFL smarter, including in-depth previews of all 32 teams with win total projections, as well as new quarterback and head coach breakdowns, Super Bowl predictions, a prop betting guide, and best futures bets from the VSIN experts, including MVP, Rookie of the Year, and Coach of the Year awards. Whether you're a seasoned bettor or just getting started, our NFL betting guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed bets. Visit vsin.com/guide to get your copy of our all-new NFL betting guide today, vsin.com/guide. Pour one out today if you had the under in the Red Sox Marlins game. Joe, what is going on in that game? Because you brought it to my attention when it was 2-2 going into extras. It is now 6-5 in the bottom of the 12th. I can only imagine the swings of emotion that you are feeling right now with a live bet on Boston.
You know, I ended up not getting the ticket in. So it was something that I liked a lot, laying $1.40 when the Sox went up 3-2. And now I'm glad for my own blood pressure that I ended up not playing it. It went up to, as I was about to play it, it went up from $1.40 to laying $3.75. So didn't do it. Very thankful that's the case.
Baseball in a nutshell there. 6-5, Red Sox still with the advantage, but it has been a crazy extra inning slate. How about Max Scherzer looking much better today as he has been on the comeback from his own injury? Although he's trailing right now to the Padres, Michael King putting together a second consecutive very good start, something I did not see coming. I'm not a big King believer long term, but the numbers continue to shove that notion right in my face as the Padres here, who have been winning with the bats, Joe, the last couple of weeks. Now they're winning with good pitching, 3-1 there, bottom eight against the Texas Rangers. And a lot of people now wondering, will the Rangers be aggressive buyers? Could Scherzer, I've even seen some rumors of, could Scherzer even be on the move here coming to the deadline, which was just a preposterous idea at the start of the year with the Rangers coming off the World Series.
Yeah, when you said buyers, my eyes almost popped out of my head. I could see them being sellers. Absolutely. You know, I could see Scherzer. It'd be interesting. Would four teams be paying him this season if the Rangers sold off and dealt Scherzer at the deadline? Because he's still getting paid by the Nationals, still getting paid by the Mets. I think that would be some sort of record. Four teams writing a paycheck for him in one calendar year. He might be able to bring something back. You know, my hesitancy with Max, look, as a diehard Mets fan, you know, watching almost every start, even when the Mets got Scherzer after seeing like the dead arm thing he was dealing with the Dodgers, my hesitancy with him has always been he can't give you a full season. And, you know, I remember talking with, you know, people in and around the Mets organization, and they never wanted to say it, but I'd kind of joke and be like, so when is Scherzer's ghost IL stint going to happen? Because I've always said he needs like a 2-week break, probably twice a year, in order to be his best come the postseason. He cannot make 32 starts and then be effective in October. And I think what you're getting with a guy who didn't make his first start until very late June is a guy who could be of some serious value to a playoff contender. So I don't know if the Rangers can swallow their pride a year removed from a World Series, but I think you can actually sell Scherzer and, you know, you're not going to get a guy like Acuna back, but maybe try to make up for some of that loss in your farm system and build ahead.
But being eight below 500, it would certainly make sense at this time of year for a team like Texas with how far back they are in their division. Scherzer 6 1/3 today, 3 earned, not bad. He only struck out 3, though, a guy who has had to just kind of grind his way with the pure ability of experience through a lot of these starts, not missing a lot of bats anymore there in his career. That is one of the couple games still going on live. We'll preview the rest of the slate here in our final hour. We'll also dive into some NFL markets, last winless team, last undefeated team. A couple interesting things to parse through together. Talk a little more about that on our final hour, Joe. But the All-Star game lineups have been announced. Curious your take on this. Would there be anybody you would like to see differently? As we'll start on the NL side, you get a lot of Philadelphia representation, as you would expect. Same deal with Milwaukee. You have a couple teams leading their respective divisions. While you would all have also expected Mookie Betts and Shohei Ohtani, Mookie on the IL, and we'll miss that. So no surprises there. William Contreras for Milwaukee at catcher. Harper of the Phils at first. Ketel Marte, I would say, well-deserving. Guy's been a stud all year for a subpar Diamondbacks team. And then Trey Turner, Alec Bohm, middle of the shortstop. Third base, left side of the infield there, representing Philadelphia. Christian Yelich in Milwaukee, and then the two Padres, Jerks and Profar, Fernando Tatis, Shohei at DH. What are you doing differently, Joe, if it is Joe Cirillo, NL manager?
Not a whole lot, man. I got to say, the one thing I would change is Trey Turner. Look, when he's been out there, he's certainly been all-star caliber. The fact of the matter is just he hasn't been out there enough, in my opinion, to earn this, right? Mookie Betts has been out there more than Trey Turner. I would have less of a qualm with Mookie Betts winning that vote to start at shortstop. But to me, you look at shortstop in the National League, it's so deep. There's so much talent. You could look towards, you know, guys in terms of guys that have played the full season thus far. CJ Abrams in Washington's been great, hitting at a decent clip, just a tick under 280, stealing bases, driving and runs, really doing it all. Speaking of stealing bases, Ellie De La Cruz, you can make an argument for him here. And then you can make an argument for Francisco Lindor here. And I don't need anyone telling me that's a homer pick, because you look at let the odds makers back me up on that one. Look at the National League MVP odds. all of a sudden, Francisco Lindor's name is in the top five, top six on those boards. Ever since he got moved to the leadoff spot after an abysmal April, he's been one of the best hitters in baseball for two consecutive months now. He's, I believe, the best fielding shortstop in the league. So defense still, you know, should matter for something. He's driving in runs. He's gotten his home run total up to 15. I think Lindor, Abrams, De La Cruz, I'd have no qualm there. Even Mookie over Trey Turner, but Trey just hasn't played enough. I do think you can argue he's, you know, a top three shortstop in Major League Baseball, let alone the National League. But he just hasn't played enough for this starting spot.
I get it. I would look at the outfield. I'm sorry. Padres have been fine, but are not deserving of two outfield spots here with Profar and Tatis. This is more, it makes me laugh anyway, just because I was at a game. It was Brewers Cardinals. This was about 4 years ago, when Marcell Ozuna once tried to climb the fence and rob a home run on a ball that landed 10 feet in front of the fence. It was one of the greatest things, greatest, most hilarious displays of baseball I've ever seen in person. But Marcell Ozuna, you got to have him in the lineup. Noted great guy, Marcell Ozuna, by the way. Wyatt Tomchek yeah, right. will appreciate that. But I'm sorry, Marcell Ozuna, second most homers in the NL. He's sixth in the majors in WRC+. I also would say there's a, you know, greater than 1% chance he could make an absolute fool out of himself trying to rob another home run that lands 10 feet shy of the warning track if you put him out there in the field. He deserves, at least, I would say, on the basis of the season. He's been the MVP for the Braves. He's the reason why they are still at least in the mix and a team that is in the driver's seat to at least get a top wild card spot there in the NL in what has otherwise been a very down year. But come on, really? Tatis? Like, I'm not a buyer, a believer at all that the Padres should get two outfield spots.
It just comes down, Ben, and I agree with you on that, but Ozuna doesn't play the outfield. He's a DH,
I know.
You can't move Ohtani, but I agree. I mean, look, Ozuna, you know, a couple of weeks ago, he was looking like he actually had a really realistic chance at a triple crown. Now, his batting average has fallen off 20 points in the last couple of weeks, so I don't think that's going to ultimately happen. But yeah, I hope Ozuna, you know, look, say what you want about off the field, man. Not a fan of his personally. But the numbers don't lie, and he is deserving, I think, of that second DH spot behind Ohtani. He'll be a reserve because he really has been the Braves MVP this year, in a year where they've been battered by injury and underperformance. I agree with your point about the outfield, by the way. Padres aren't deserving of two. You can actually argue Jackson Merrill might be more deserving than Fernando Tatis. I mean, the Padres have a tremendous outfield. So yeah, it's hard to put a mediocre team, give them two of the three, but outfielders in the National League this year have actually been really down. The one guy I think you can make an argument over Tatis, Brian Reynolds, over in Pittsburgh. But Profar, I think, is the most deserving Padre. And then Yelich out there. Yeah, it's a weak year for outfielders in the National League. That's my biggest takeaway.
This is a fun exercise. It just allows us to yell at clouds on things that don't really have any meaning. But that's what's fun about a July 4th show. AL, I don't have a ton of issues. I would love to see Bobby Witt is deserving of a starting spot, but I get it. It's tough. Gunnar Henderson's been amazing. There's only one shortstop who can play. And Jose Altuve also is deserving in the middle of the infield there for the Astros at second. Anything you would change here, as we got on our screen, the All-Star starters for the American League?
Yeah, I mean, I can't really say I would change a thing. I hate for controversy's sake that I couldn't. But, you know, maybe, I don't know, Vladdy's having a really good year. I was going to say Josh Naylor. Maybe he's been great. His batting average is 50 ticks lower than Guerrero. He's 243 while Vlad's hitting like 296. But, you know, I care about batting average. People all around the game have shown over the past few years that they don't anymore. So if batting average is now an insignificant stat, then, yeah, Josh Naylor's got, you know, seven more homers, 13 more RBI, a higher slugging percentage. To me, Naylor maybe at an offensive position you can make the argument for, but I'm not really – it's more of an argument that's pro-Naylor, not anti-Vladdy. Vladdy's had a very fine year, with the exception of the home run total being a little lower than we're accustomed to.
All I know is when I went to the All-Star game, the one time I did, 2011, Chase Field in Arizona. It was the best part about that is seeing what jerseys people are wearing. And that year, the best one by far of the, you know, the current crop of players, some random guy was wearing an Aaron Crow Royals jersey. Who, fun fact, was an All-Star? Aaron Crow. Never forget.
Wow.
Pride of the University of Missouri. Just wanted to point that out. I was also sitting behind Steve Garvey, who had just been fired as part of the Frank McCourt sale, which was a wild time to be alive. We'll say that much.
And now he's running for Senate.
And now he's, who would have thought? Now he's running for Senate. My dad took a picture with him. He was a big fan back in the day. We've got one more hour to go here on the July 4th edition of Sharp Money. We'll talk some NFL futures up next.